protect himself from the overwhelming feelings he didn't understand or want. But he didn't. He gave her so little, and he was going to give her this if it fucking killed him. She spread the antibiotic cream over the raw lacerations and then gently wrapped gauze around his hand. She took his left hand and did the same thing, brushing her lips gently over the wounds. Her lashes lifted and she looked up at him. Those green eyes did something to him. He couldn't look away, not even when she dropped her gaze to his hand and applied the ointment and wrapped his knuckles. He couldn't take his eyes off of her. She hadn't asked him questions or argued about sleeping downstairs. How could he explain he could sleep indoors, surrounded by his brothers and the girls, but not in a bedroom upstairs, where there was only the two of them? That it didn't feel safe? She hadn't gotten upset when he'd knocked her hand away, when all she'd wanted to do was touch his body the way he touched hers. He couldn't explain his reasons for that either, but he had to give her something. "Anya, I wouldn't be in this house if you weren't here. It's our house. I want you to make it a home for us." She smiled at him. "That's good, because I've all kinds of ideas. I wasn't lying when I told you I was good at this. I'm excited to help Elena with the restaurant as well. She told me she'd teach me to ride. I had no idea Lana and Elena had been riding as long as all of you." His gut nodded. "Ride?" he echoed. She nodded. "I love being on the motorcycle. I had no idea how it could make me feel." "Let's learn to walk before you try to run, baby. Stay on my bike with me for a while. Hell, if he was lucky, he'd knock her up, just like Ice suggested. That way she wouldn't leave him, and she would forget all about wanting a bike of her own. He was going to strangle Elena. He knew damn well she'd made the offer on purpose, just so she could laugh at him when he lost his mind. He wasn't going to fall into Elena's trap and protest, though. He was going to bide his time." He wrapped his arm around Anya's shoulders and pulled her back into him. "Can you do that for me? Just for a little while?" She smiled that beautiful smile, the one she reserved for him. "I can do that. Are you going to try to sleep? If you need me to, I'll go upstairs, honey." His gut clenched at the offer. He knew she wanted to sleep with him. A thousand reasons why she couldn't ran through his mind. He was naked, though. No weapons close. If he got his hands on her, he'd be able to pull back. "Stay here. This is good. I want to sleep next to you." He did want to sleep next to her, more than anything. Her smile was worth all the anxiety he tucked away deep. She lay back and turned on her side, facing away from him. He knew she did it on purpose. He wrapped his body around hers, pulling her into him, his arm locking around her waist, his cock snug against her ass. He inhaled the scent of her hair. He fucking loved it. He had no idea it would feel like this to lie next to his woman, his arms around her, her hair in his face, feeling at peace. He had never had that before, either. A couple of hours later, Reaper jerked awake, his heart pounding, his fist wrapping in silky hair, already yanking up before he could stop himself. He had turned over in the night onto his back. She lay across him, her hair sliding over his cock and thighs, that thick braid an erotic snake bent on destroying him. She gasped, and he took her mouth, desperate to prevent her from seeing the demon and how close she'd come to innocently arousing him. He kissed her until neither of them could think. Then he took her on her hands and knees, her back to him, her hands occupied with keeping her body lifted off the blankets, although she went to her elbows, her breath coming out in sing-song moans. After, he held her, his heart still beating too hard, his mind in chaos. The sweet peace hadn't lasted nearly as long as he needed it to. Chapter 14 Lana drove the BMW right up to the front of the Ghost Club. She looked the handsome valet up and down with cool eyes, letting her gaze drift over him from head to toe and then back up to his groin speculatively. When she lifted her lashes, she smiled at him. He rushed around to open the door for her. She shifted in the seat, turned sideways, and put both elegant legs out. She wore stockings that ended at the tops of her thighs, held there by lacy black garters. Her skirt pulled up as she stepped out onto her $2,000 very high heels. He offered his hand, and she took it as if it were her due. She stood up gracefully, the skin-tight golden dress clinging to every curve. Her hair, black as a raven's wing, swung around her face, drawing attention to the perfect oval, high cheekbones, luscious red mouth, and long black lashes. Diamonds dripped from her ears on golden chains. She dropped her keys into his hand and watched with amusement as he rushed around the car to open the door for Elena. Elena complimented her, with natural platinum hair, wild and glossy, impossible to tame. Her eyes were icy blue, made even more startling because her lashes were long and dark. She wore red, crimson. The material seemed burned into her skin, a stretchy lace that could have been shocking, but was only erotic. She smiled at the attendant as well. When she moved her head and her hair shifted, red rubies sparkled in her ears. Lana swept toward the door, Elena in perfect step with her. The parking valet watched them walk to the door of the club. He didn't take his eyes off them until the door closed behind them. He stood there, as if in a daze, before his head jerked up as if coming out of a dream, and he ran around and slid into the driver's seat. From his vantage point on the roof across the street from the club, Preacher watched the entire drama play out through the scope of his rifle. "Girls are in," he reported. Once Lana and Elena were safely inside, he switched his attention to the valet. "He's definitely the spotter. He's chatting into his little radio no one is supposed to notice. Lana gave me the sign that he's wired. You've got this, Lana. He's marked you both." "I made certain he noticed us," Lana returned, her voice filled with amusement. "A little bit of leg and a lot of attitude gets them every time." He bit hard. "Don't overplay your hand. Make them come to you," Czar advised. "No worries. Elena found us a table, and we're going to sit, drink, and talk. I'm using the cash, flashing it. Gave valet boy a nice tip." Preacher turned his attention to the street and alley. From his position, he could see partway down the alley, enough to cover mechanic as he set up very powerful listening devices. He staggered around as if he'd been drinking, placing the tiny bugs along the very edge of the building and down along the stairway that led to the basement. "Audio in place," mechanic reported. "Changing in the van and going in." Keys set up on the corner of the alley, pacing, looking at his watch, glancing at traffic as if waiting for a ride. "I'm in position," he said. "Have eyes on the inside of the basement, but can't see anything but an empty room. We'll change and follow mechanic inside." "Van's in position," transporter said. He had signs around warning people of high voltage, the manhole open and a vest on, just to complete the scene. "I'll tell you when it's clear." Preacher used binoculars to sweep along the buildings, the rooftops, and then the street and alley. It was dark enough with several good places for his brothers to disappear. They were true phantoms in the night. The members of the Ghost Club were high-powered attorneys, corporate presidents, and CEOs of companies. These were men no one would ever guess were behind the Ghost Club, or that they might ride with colors into the territory of the Diamondbacks and demand a cut of everything they did. They weren't taking the risks of running drugs or guns, counterfeiting, overseeing prostitution or human trafficking. They simply demanded a share, or they would start slicing up the women the various clubs cared about. Code had meticulously worked to uncover identities, following the emails and chatter between various companies. It was all in their ridiculous encryption they thought no one would notice or break. Code was an elite hacker. His friend Kat, a woman he'd never met, was as elite as he was. They often worked together to get through a particularly difficult firewall, and she'd helped him so the club could get the information fast. She followed one trail while he followed another, both working through the night and all the next day to find various members. Those in the Ghost Club thought themselves invisible, impossible to find even if a club came after them. They used outside resources to do their dirty work, to ride Harleys, wear colors, and approach the other clubs. They had others who enticed club members to gamble. Their tentacles reached not just to motorcycle clubs, but many businesses. Those men sat back in their corporate offices, certain of their own safety, getting richer, more powerful, and feeling very entitled. "You're clear," Preacher said. "Hurry, though." Mechanic and Keys emerged from the van dressed in dark suits that easily cost several thousand dollars. They looked like wealthy Russians, in town for a few short days just to relax and have a little fun, maybe pick up women for a night or two. They were tall, good-looking, with a few facial scars, just enough to look interesting. They talked to each other in their native language, pausing just outside the club to crush out a Russian cigarette, giving the valet a good look at them. They didn't deign to look at the kid in his uniform. They just pulled open the ornate door and sauntered in like they owned the place. "He took the bait," Preacher reported. "He's chatting into his radio. We're getting an audio feed. The casino is in full swing," Code reported. "I can hear a couple of employees talking about Lana and Elena. Girls, you've got a few of them excited." "Shame on us," Elena purred her response, keeping in character. "We've had several drinks sent to our table already. Hard to flash money, but giving generous tips to the waitress. Let her catch a glimpse of the roll of cash. And no, Czar, we weren't obvious about it." The club was crowded, the light dim, the music loud. The dance floor was packed and nearly every table taken. Elena watched as the bartender slipped one man in a suit a thin card, much like the key to a hotel room. He did it when he handed the man a drink. "Look alive, Elena," Lana said, leaning across the table to touch Elena's hand, laughing softly to give the illusion she was telling her friend something funny. "Looks like we've got a fish on the hook. Maybe a whale. Look at his cufflinks." Her brothers could hear everything she said. A man loomed over them, coming up to the table to stand between them. "Ladies." He was very good-looking, and he knew it, giving them a smile that might have fluttered a few hearts. "Welcome to the Ghost Club. I'm Raoul, the manager. If there's anything I can help you with, just let me know." Lana gave him her beautiful smile. "It's our first time here. Elena came to visit, and I want to show her a good time in my hometown. This is a beautiful club. I thought we might dance, drink, find some friends. Maybe go to the Lucky Lady Casino just for added fun. I've been there a few times and want to show Elena a good time." She named a casino frequented by many San Franciscans and tourists. Lana's voice was friendly and open, but throaty, husky, sounding like sin. She ran her finger up and down the tabletop as if stroking it. Once she crossed her legs, allowing the slit in her clingy dress to show off her thigh and just a peek of her sexy garter. The manager's eyes strayed several times to her legs. "I think our club can provide you with dance, drinks, and maybe a friend or two," Raoul answered. Lana looked around, taking in all the suits and ties. "Looks that way. I think we've found our new favorite place to unwind." "What do you do?" Raoul asked. Lana shrugged. "The two of us started a little company, one that makes apps for businesses such as this. Mobile apps. It's all the rage and very useful." Her fingers tapped on the tabletop. "Elena oversees our employees in San Diego, and I work out of San Francisco."
"Really?"
Raoul looked very interested. "What's the name of your company?" Code had created a company for them overnight. He'd built the website, the facts, adding them to the Forbes Entrepreneurs Under 30, putting their fake company and the stats there.
$130 million. That should entice Raoul. Two bored women with more money than they know what to do with. They've already casually mentioned a casino. He'll take the bait, Preacher said.
Perhaps my club would benefit from such a thing.
On the move, Lana said, sounding bored. She wasn't there to work. She was there to play, and she wanted that very clear.
We can send a rep if you're interested. She wanted to make it clear as well. She didn't sell her own product.
Raoul glanced toward the bar. Immediately his phone beeped. He gave them a rueful smile.
I'll be back in a moment. Can I have Dirk send you drinks on the house?
We've got more than we can handle right here. Elena declined, her hand sweeping along the array of drinks in front of them. They couldn't take a chance on getting any new drinks from the bar, just in case they were drugged.
Good to meet you, ladies. Enjoy your evening.
Raoul turned away from them, looking at his phone.
He's checking on the company.
Yeah,
he fell for it. Mechanic and Keys are getting the same treatment from a female manager.
Interesting, Czar said.
Are you getting anything from the tunnels?
Some chatter. It's pretty quiet. There's a woman down there for certain. She's crying, but very softly.
I heard two men talking in low voices, Transporter said.
I'm trying to clean up the audio now. The walls are thick.
The club members had learned from childhood to be patient, to be precise and meticulous about details.
Lana and Elena ignored Raoul. They danced several dances with different men.
Keys asked Lana to dance, and Mechanic asked Elena. They chatted but stayed in their roles, knowing they were being watched.
Keys made a move to join Lana and Elena, but they just shook their heads, declining the invitation. The two men shrugged and went on the hunt for other women. They had no trouble picking up partners.
Raoul seemed to make his rounds, and then came back to their table.
Are you having a good time?
Lana nodded.
It's been fun.
She picked up her small clutch and fiddled with the catch.
We'll definitely be back again. Nice club.
She made it clear she was ready to go.
Raoul had a thin card in his hand. It had a barcode on one end.
For some VIPs, we have a little place that is far more fun, especially if you like to gamble.
What kind of gambling?
Lana tipped her head up. Elena put her chin in her hand and looked up at the manager as if interested for the first time.
Cards, craps, roulette, you name it, we have it.
He kept his voice low.
I don't know. I'm damn good at cards, Lana said.
I don't lose. It's a thing I've got with numbers. Some place small, they get upset. I like this club and want to be able to come back, so I think I'll pass.
You're that good.
Raoul put a little sneer into his voice.
She is,
Elena assured.
I'm better at craps, but I've never won big the way she does at cards. I'm a sometimes big winner.
Raoul concentrated his attention on Lana.
I think you'll find we accommodate winners here as well. Would you like to try? It's exclusive and illegal.
The two women looked at each other and then broke into smiles. Lana brought her purse in close.
We're in. Follow me, ladies, he said.
Lana and Elena stood up, glanced casually around the room to see that several players had been selected. Keys and Mechanic were among them.
One diversion coming up. Give us a half hour to wreak havoc. I'm going to break their stupid bank. Take these assholes down.
Don't get cocky, Lana, Czar cautioned. You stick to the plan. You're the diversion. Win big. If all four of you win at separate things, you'll cause a commotion. They'll pull off security in the basement to get to the casino. Don't do anything that will have them putting a gun to your head.
They do that, Elena said. And I'll burn this club down around their ears.
Innocent people are partying there, Czar reminded.
You're such a downer, Czar, Lana said.
You let the tigers out to play with the lambs, and now you say don't hurt them.
Damn it. The goal is to get Hammer's woman out, not have fun, Lana.
Lana made tisking noises, and the sway of her hips became more exaggerated. The casino was far larger than she thought it could be.
She took a good look around so the tiny camera in her necklace could pick up everything and feed it to Transporter and the others in the van. Elena, Keys, and Mechanic did the same. They had separated to wander through different areas so they could record every detail of the room. They also wanted to be in four separate sections so there was no way, when the owners reviewed the tapes, that they could look like they were working together. Lana won immediately, the first three hands. She dropped out several times, lost a couple more hands, but losing only a few hundred, and then she won consistently, hand after hand. It was rare for her to drop out, but when she didn't, she was either bluffing or she had the winning cards. It wasn't long before others were watching. Elena took her time, playing a few hands of blackjack, going to one of the slot machines, and then making her way to the craps table. Like Lana, she won a few and lost a few. She'd nearly lost all of her chips when she suddenly went on a winning streak. She was vocal about her wins, and soon quite a few people abandoned what they were doing and gathered around her at the craps table, placing their bets based on what she did. Very soon, she wasn't the only big winner. Mechanic chose the slot machines, the ones with the biggest payouts. Any machine responded to his touch. Tumblers dropped, skipped, the big wins popping up so that chaos reigned. The noise blared loudly, declaring him a grand prize winner. It was 500,000. He played it off when the manager hurried to his side, checking to make certain he'd really won. Others gathered around him, excited for him. He was given the money right there. It was an underground casino, no taxes reported because one couldn't report the income. He went to the bar, ordered a drink, and watched the bartender carefully as the man made it. Bottles were thrown in the air in a show, but Mechanic watched his hands, that quick flick, fingers sliding into his pocket. The alcohol was poured, and in one move, as the bottles did a triple flip and everyone's eyes went there, the bartender poured a clear liquid into his drink. He tipped the man big, picked up the drink, and wandered back toward the slot machines. Manager just nodded to a waitress. "Watch yourself and watch your pockets," Transporter cautioned. "Lana, Elena and Keys, watch your drinks," he added. Lana won another big hand, and several people clapped. Elena was practically dancing, and the crowd around her grew in direct proportion to the pile of chips in front of her. Keys sat down at the high-stakes blackjack table. He won so many times they changed dealers and decks. Mechanic scored another large win, this one 50,000. He'd been watched carefully by the waitress flirting outrageously with him. Half the time he appeared as if he wasn't paying attention, as he shoved in fives and tens and pulled the lever several times before it suddenly hit. Within 10 minutes he had his own crowd. The four of them were taking the casino for a ride. Soon they had three managers and several security guards watching them intently. The crowds grew around them, and as the four continued to win, others won at the craps table and the slot machines. "Now or never. Two men are running up the tunnel to assist in the casino. I've counted five left down there, probably in the little rooms to the left of where they're holding their prisoner," Transporter said. "Just be aware, I don't have exact numbers. I've counted five individual voices coming from that side of the room. They're closest to the transmitters. It's possible I'm not picking up everything." "Thanks, Mother Hen." Czar clapped him on the back as the van's doors opened and first Reaper, then Czar emerged, with Savage behind him and Steel and Player bringing up the rear. The five men walked quickly along the sidewalk, hands in their pockets, the shadows blurring their images, hoodies pulled over their faces. The cameras had been disabled, as well as the ones along the street, in the surrounding buildings, and the Ghost Club itself. That didn't mean some random camera wouldn't catch a glimpse of them, or someone with a cell phone wouldn't take it in their head to capture the five of them walking down the basement steps. That was their entry point. It was easy enough for Steel to put his hands on the bars covering the entrance, warm them and remove them. He then found the lock and worked his magic there.
He was good with any kind of alloy, man-made especially. He stepped back, and once again, Reaper took lead. The plans Anya had drawn for them showed the long hallways skirting around the walls of the casino that shared the basement. The hall sloped downhill and was lined with small rooms. Some of those rooms were very tiny, and in another age, when smuggling and speakeasies were the norm, he knew they'd been used for the storage of liquor. Reaper blocked out the men behind him. Savage would have their back trail, knowing Reaper would be alert to anything in front of them. His senses were finely honed, and he used every one of them. It was rare for both Czar and Steel to go on the same mission together. That way, if one was killed, the other was still there to lead. According to Anya's floor plans, they would need Steel when they got to Hammer's woman. Reaper's sinking heart and that faint smell of blood told him they might need Steel's healing skills even more. Her name was Maria, and Reaper had seen it on Hammer's face, that overwhelming emotion he was practically choking on, even when he was determined to hide it. Hammer thought the world revolved around that woman, just as Reaper did with Anya. He had a bad feeling, and he didn't want to bring a dead body home to the president of the demons. She had to be a good woman if the man looked as he had when talking about her disappearance. He halted, one hand raised in the air, fingers closed in a fist. There were narrow rope lights strung overhead along the sides of the ceiling. Those lights were fairly dim, and his men were silent when they walked. They had a lot of practice in that as well. He learned to walk over broken glass barefoot without uttering a sound, or allowing his weight to crack a piece of glass. They'd been beaten repeatedly for allowing twigs and branches to snap under his feet, or disturbing a rock when he hadn't felt the object with unfamiliar shoes on. He signaled for Player to check the other rooms while he moved forward. Straight ahead, at the end of the hall, he could make out the large cage with metal bars from ceiling to the floor. The scent of blood grew stronger, and he could hear her now, the soft moans and pitiful crying. He'd rip out throats if Anya was lying on that cold stone in her own blood. Whatever they had done to the woman, he knew it was bad. He was in full-blown assassin mode as he moved toward the room just off the dungeon. He'd spent his entire childhood in a dungeon. The bathroom for all of them was the corner. Every now and then they'd been given buckets to clean up. They had no clothes, little food, and there were endless beatings that brought blood. Blood attracted insects and rats. There were chains to lock them to the wall while men and women brutalized the younger ones and whipped them front and back. Yeah, he knew about dungeons and the kinds of vile monsters who shoved women and children, those weaker than them, into prisons so they could do their worst. He'd been weak when he was 4. He'd started striking back at 5. By the time he was 10, he was lethal, scary. But he'd had to hide it. They'd all had to hide what they'd been becoming in order to survive. Reaper tried to pull his mind away from those memories. When they'd taken him to torture him, raping and beating him repeatedly, burning him, slicing him open with knives, all to make him tell who the ringleader was. Then they'd brought Savage and done the same to him in front of Reaper. He'd remained silent. So had Savage. They hadn't looked at each other for a very long time after that, too humiliated and guilty to look each other in the eye. Now the odor of blood was a stench in his nostrils. He paused at the door of the room where the guards were playing cards. He heard them, their laughter, the murmur of their voices. All 5 of them. Pool table, 4 doors down, right side, 2 men. Player took them out. Transporter informed them. Reaper ignored that. He locked eyes with the woman. Her face was bloody and swollen. She wore the remnants of a top and nothing else. There was blood on her arms, long, ugly streaks. More on her thighs and dripping from under the shirt. There was even more blood between her legs. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Those guards were going to die hard. Seeing it coming, hurting every second. Reaper raised his finger to his lips and mouthed, "Hammer sent us."
She nodded and continued that soft moaning. Occasionally, she added a hiccuping sob. She was smart and quick. Most people tortured like she'd been would have reacted before they thought. She didn't, and she tried to keep up the illusion that she was alone. He deliberately stepped into the doorway. The five men looked up. One actually had time to throw his cards before Reaper was on them. The card-thrower would have done better to pull his gun. Reaper's blade sliced through an artery in the closest man's thigh. The knife continued an upward motion and sliced through the artery under the arm of the second man. The third took it in the right side carotid artery. The fourth across his throat, a pretty slash from left to right. The fifth man got it in the gut, his intestines spilling out. "Get her out of there, Czar, and don't let her see this mess." Reaper was already on the table to avoid the worst of the spraying blood. It was going to be a bloodbath in there. He kicked a gun away from the one with the blood pumping out of his thigh. "You're going to die," the one with his underarm spewing blood stated, and then coughed, blood bubbling through his mouth. Reaper shrugged, not saying a word. What was there to say? "Ghosts everywhere," the one with the thigh slash added. The two with throat and neck wounds were already slumping unconscious. 2 minutes down, two more to go, and they'd be gone. The leg might take a little longer, but it was pumping like mad. The armpit was a kill almost immediately. The man just staggered as he tried to stand, and then crashed to the floor unconscious. Thigh wound went next. The man holding his intestines took the longest. He just stared at Reaper, too dumb to know he was already dead. "We got to get her out of here now." Czar made it a command. "Put a bullet in their fucking heads if you have to, but don't leave any of them alive. She's in bad shape, Reaper. Bad." Steele had come prepared. He had his medical kit. He'd do his best as soon as they got her in the van. Reaper had the feeling that the urgency was because they were afraid they were going to lose her, not because someone else might come down and realize their prison was under attack. Reaper watched the fifth man fall forward, right out of his chair, face first, into a pool of his own blood and intestines. He wasn't checking pulses. He knew dead men when he saw them. Reaper stepped out of the room and shut the door, falling into the front of the line to lead Czar and Steele out. Savage took up the rear, and Player stepped in front of Savage. Czar carried the woman. Her eyes were closed, and she held herself rigid, as if afraid to move, that her rescue might not be real. Savage had covered her with his jacket. None of them exposed Czar or Steele to cameras, if it could be helped. Mechanic had shut down everything for 2 blocks, but that didn't mean cell phones weren't around, so neither man could give up his hoodie. As they approached the end of the hall, Reaper stopped abruptly. The hall branched here. One way went up toward the casino, the other toward the outside to the basement steps that led to the alley. 2 men rounded the corner. Reaper was on them instantly, breaking the closest man's neck and slamming his shoulder into the second as he shoved the first man's body off him. He drove the second man into the wall. Player was there instantly, gripping the man's head, locking it to him and turning so the body hung over his shoulder. He jerked hard, and the crack was audible. They were out fast, up the stairs and through the alley. Transporter was there with the van, both doors wide open. The woman was handed in gently and laid down on the mat they'd brought, Steele on one side, his medical bag there, Czar on the other to assist him. Player took up a guard position in the front with Transporter. Reaper and Savage stayed in the back where they could better protect the president and vice president of their club. "Let's go home," Transporter said. "Mechanic, Keys, pick up Preacher and get out of there. Lana, Elena, make your exit. Watch each other in case they try to put a tracker on you. We'll sweep the cars at the rendezvous point."
"They've already given us a VIP card that allows us back here as well as into any of their other clubs. They want to recoup their money,"
Lana said smugly. "So many people won tonight, not just us, that they can't conceive that we might have cheated.
although I'm certain they'll review the tapes. They just won't find anything to make them believe we weren't just lucky.
Anya wandered around the outside of the clubhouse. She had a couple of hours before work, and she was bored. She was looking at the flower beds, all in bad shape, when she stumbled right into what felt like an oak tree. Hands caught her arms, steadying her. "Be careful, woman." She looked up to see Ink. He was covered in tattoos from his neck down. They drifted under his shirt and down where it was impossible to see, but she wanted to look because the tattoos were so intriguing.
"What are you doing?"
She gestured toward the flower beds.
"They're dismal and need work. I was going over a mental list trying to figure out what I'll need to bring them back."
Farther out, someone had planted a lot of wildflowers in the meadow, but the beds were a mess.
"Don't wander off. Stay in the compound," he cautioned, and started to walk away.
Ink?
Her heart went crazy. She was out of her mind to ask, but asking didn't hurt. When he turned back, she held up her wrists.
"Is it possible to tattoo Reaper's fingerprints on my wrists? You know, like a bracelet?"
Interest blossomed. He stepped close and took her hands, turning them over to inspect her inner wrists where the faint smudges of Reaper's fingerprints remained.
"I have his prints."
Her stomach dropped.
"You do? Why would you have his prints?"
He shrugged.
"When we go out on a job, we don't use our own prints. I make them up for the brothers, and their prints are always in the various projects I'm doing."
He turned her hands over again.
"What about across the top of your wrist? A fine gold chain, and under across the tender part of your wrists, the fingerprints. I can see the marks on your skin, so we'd know the exact placement on both hands. You really want to do this?"
Anya nodded.
"I want him to know I'm not going anywhere. When he..."
She broke off. Even to his brother, she wasn't going to disclose private information about Reaper. Maybe they already knew. Maybe he'd told them what issues he had, and they knew even more than she did. But that didn't matter. Reaper was hers to protect now, and she was determined to do it. She had no idea what being an old lady entailed, but she was going to find her way and be the best old lady any man could have.
"It will be a reminder to me, too, when I lose my temper."
"Let's do it now."
"Right now?
I have to work in a couple of hours. Preacher isn't here, so Maestro is filling in. He doesn't exactly like to bartend, and he isn't fast at it."
Ink shook his head. "That dog. He could be fast if he wanted to be. He's dogging it, so no one asks him to fill in."
He turned and started walking to the front of the compound, and then on past it, continuing down the road. Heart doing triple time, Anya followed him. Who got fingerprints tattooed on their wrist? She had to be out of her mind. The tattoo parlor wasn't that far, and it felt good to stretch her legs and be out of the confines of the compound. It looked like a fortress with its high chain-link fence, a place bikers might make their last stand. She rubbed her wrist.
What if he gets into trouble and they want his fingerprints, and he isn't around, and they find his real prints on me?
Anya, Torpedo Ink doesn't take a job and then use their own prints. We have an entire library of prints. They peel them off after and get rid of them. They're very small and thin. Once off the warmth of the finger and put in water, they'll dissolve. They wear thin gloves over those, and, of course, they don't ride with their colors. Few, if any, on a job see their faces. She found herself in a good-sized room with two cubicles. There was a long, padded table and several low chairs with backs that were at an angle. Ink gestured toward the heavily padded, more conventional chair. "Have a seat." Was she really going to do this? What if she broke up with Reaper? What if it just didn't work? He had so many issues, and she didn't know enough about him. He was violent. He pounded his fists into the wall. But what if he ever turned that fury on her? With great trepidation, she watched Ink washing his hands, sterilizing them and then laying his equipment out. There were needles.
"You ever get a tattoo before?"
She shook her head. No, but I always wanted to get one. I had this life plan. Tattoo was step four, after I made it and had a healthy bank account. I was well on my way. Money's still there. She shook her head. It isn't. Somehow they were able to drain my accounts. Even my savings are gone. He shrugged. No worries. Code will get it back for you with interest. He took her wrist and laid her arm straight on the surface, wiping it down with alcohol. So you'll like to sketch. Did you sketch your own tattoo for when you made it? She shook her head and watched as he quickly sketched her a thin chain. It appeared fragile, delicate, as if it could be broken easily. She shook her head again. Not like that. I want something strong, unbreakable, a reminder to both of us. Ink's gaze moved over her face with something like respect. He nodded his head, just a jerk of his chin, but she could tell he was pleased with her. He tossed the piece of paper and sketched another chain. This one had thick links, not gold. Titanium was silver, and when he drew the bracelet part, he based the links on that alloy in its raw form. There were little jagged bumps along the line of the chain. She loved it. We'll do this in a charcoal silver effect. He turned her hand over and took the carefully prepared paper with copies of each fingerprint. He placed them over the smudges on her wrist and left the distinct imprints. He tatted those first in black, carefully following each whorl until she had the imprint of four fingers spread across each wrist. He did a print of Reaper's thumb on top of her wrist, right where his thumb had pressed into her. Around the top of her wrist was the chain. There was no wasted motion with ink. He was skilled in his chosen art, and it showed in every move, every clean line he tatted onto her wrist. The chain was going to be gorgeous. She could see, even though she wanted strength, something unbreakable. He gave it beauty. Her heart hurt as he slowly, with painstaking care, brought the chain around to touch the first and last of Reaper's fingerprints on each wrist. Ink didn't talk much while he worked, but she didn't want him to. She was too busy thinking about the enormity of her decision. She didn't know for sure if Reaper was serious about having his prints on her, but she liked the idea the more she thought about it. She loved the way the two bracelets looked around the top of her wrists. The silver gleamed in places. Ink gave her all the necessary care instructions and covered the tattoos, telling her to keep them covered for 2 to 4 hours. She asked if she could keep them wrapped through her shift. He said he'd stop by and put the cream on it before covering it with a thin, light bandage. She went to work with both wrists wrapped. It looked almost like she had tried to off herself. She got lots of questions and even more tips, and just told them she'd gotten tattoos. Everyone wanted to see, but she just shook her head. She wanted Reaper to see first. She was halfway through her shift when Jonas Harrington, the local sheriff, and Jackson DeVoe, his deputy, walked in. She had the hardest time with cops. Both men were nice, very polite. She couldn't fault them on that. But she was always afraid she was going to say or do the wrong thing. "It's Anya, isn't it?" Jonas asked with one of his smiles. His eyes were on her wrists. Jackson had frozen, his face very still. "It isn't what it looks like," she assured, not waiting for the inevitable question. "I got tattoos a few hours ago. I could take off the bandages, but I think it would be more sanitary to finish my shift first. What can I get you?" Maestro moved over next to her, smiling at the two cops. "What's up, man? Haven't seen you for a long time. More than a year." He nodded toward Bettina. "She's got three needing drinks on you." He turned back to Jonas. "I detest bartending. Don't know the drinks. She not only knows the drinks, but she remembers what everyone is drinking. What can I do for you?" "It seems we have more disappearances. Still have nothing on the three we asked about yesterday. Now we've got three more. It hasn't been a full 24 hours yet, but they didn't return to their motel rooms last night, and their families are worried. We were told all three of these men were in the bar the other night." "You're asking the wrong man," Maestro said. I don't have a clue what you're talking about. I'm never here. Wish I wasn't now.
He raised his voice.
Anya, they need you here. Are you finished with those drinks?
He added the last on a hopeful note. She laughed at him.
You make the worst bartender. Preacher needs someone else to come in on his days off.
She leaned against the bar, trying to look nonchalant instead of as if she might faint any moment.
What can I do for you?
The three we asked about last evening, did they ever come back in?
She wrinkled her nose. Nope. And I'm glad. One of them in particular was a pain. This is a biker bar. I get that some of the customers are going to harass us, but I didn't much like his names for me. They left, though, and were heading in the direction of their bikes. I wasn't paying attention. I was with Reaper, and I tend not to pay attention to anything or anyone when I'm with him.
She blushed, because it was true.
Reaper?
Jonas's eyebrow nearly went through his hairline. You were with Reaper? She nodded.
We're living together.
She might as well have dropped a bomb. There was satisfaction in telling them the truth. She had been with Reaper, and that meant if anything had happened to those three men, no one could blame him.
What about these men? Were they in here? Jonas asked.
He spread three photographs onto the bar. Anya glanced around the bar, as if to make certain no one needed a drink. Maestro hovered, ready to protect her. She was certain. She tapped Thomas Randall's picture.
They were in the other night when you came in. They sat together, very quiet, kept mostly to themselves. I think this one talked to Elena, but only briefly. I'm not sure. It was busy that night. They seemed nice enough. They definitely aren't bikers, and they didn't pretend to be like some people do when they come in. I pegged them for businessmen.
That was the last time you saw them?
The last time I saw this one. The other two came in the next night, had one drink, and left. They didn't talk to anyone.
Jonas turned his head to look at Jackson, who nodded slightly. She was certain Jackson was the lie detector, although Jonas might be as well. Both men were certainly shrewd, sure of themselves, very confident.
I'm sorry I'm not more help.
It's strange that six men have come to this bar and no one has seen them since. Jonas made it a statement, his eyes unblinking on her face.
She stared down at the pictures to avoid that penetrating gaze. I don't understand. Do you think something happened to them when they left here?
Like what?
The first three might have been drunk, and they could have done something stupid. I wasn't about to ask them for their keys because Preacher had already left. I cut them off just before closing when I realized how awful they were acting, but the other three barely drank. One, maybe two drinks at most.
She decided sticking as close to the truth as possible would be best. It would be unusual for three bikers to drive off a cliff, but it could happen if they were drunk enough.
That wouldn't explain the other three men, though.
Jonas gathered up the photos.
I don't like having to contact wives and tell them there's no trace of their husbands or their children's fathers.
She shook her head.
How awful for you. Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Maestro bumped her hip.
Seriously, she has to get back to work. Preacher will be here tomorrow. Maybe he can give you something else. I need her now.
Customers were stacked up. Anya sent the two cops a small smile and turned back to making drinks, working fast to catch up. She just wanted the night to end. Mostly, she worried about Reaper and what was happening.
Chapter 15. It was 4 in the morning before Reaper pulled up on his Harley to the house on the cliff. He sat, straddling the bike, staring at the large, two-story, nearly completely glass structure. Fortunately, the glass was mostly on the ocean side, so it would be difficult to come at him through those long banks of windows. Still, he'd have to do something to make the place more secure. He had to appreciate the architecture, though. The house was designed to take advantage of the views. He turned his head as a motorcycle started up. He lifted a hand to Fateh.
"Thanks, man,"
he said, meaning it.
Fateh was on his way to being a fully patched member of their club. The man never shirked his duty.
in fact, went above the call. A second motorcycle started up, and Maestro rode over to where he was parked.
"Escorted your woman home," Maestro reported. "Everything go okay tonight?"
"They fucked up that woman. Hammer's got a long road ahead of him," Reaper said. "Lana, Elena, Keys, and Mechanic made the club a buttload of money. 7 dead. Cops came around tonight. Questioned your woman again about that douchebag Deke and his friends. Brought up the Burroughs brothers and Randall. She handled it like a pro. She's going to be a good old lady." Reaper was certain she would be. The moment he'd laid eyes on her, he'd known she was the one. He'd prepared for it, sending away the patches for her jacket. He wanted that shit all over her. Property of Reaper. He wanted everyone to know. When they went on runs with the Diamondbacks or any other club, she was off limits. "Thanks for looking out for her."
"No problem, Reaper. Get some sleep."
Reaper waited until the bike was making its way along the curves in the road leading back to the clubhouse before he slid off his motorcycle and walked to the front door. Every muscle in his body hurt, every joint. His knuckles ached. Mostly he was bone-tired. None of that mattered. He knew she was in the house. Anya. His Anya. She had to be. Or Maestro or Fateh would have told him. It didn't matter that he knew. He still had to see her to believe it. He walked into the entryway, the large foyer with floor-to-ceiling mirrors and gleaming white marble on the floor. 2 steps into the great room and he stopped dead. The blankets were downstairs, the fireplace on low. She lay on her stomach on top of the blankets, naked, her long legs sprawled out. Her arms lay casually at her sides, fingertips nearly touching her hips. Her hair was in the inevitable braid she seemed to prefer to sleep in. She killed him. She looked like the sexiest angel he'd ever laid eyes on. She hadn't gone to bed upstairs, a place he wasn't certain he'd ever be able to sleep in. She'd made up the bed in front of the fireplace and gone to sleep there waiting for him. He pulled off his boots, looking at her the entire time, wondering how he'd managed to get through the night. Now, early morning, without making a mistake that would get her hurt. Upstairs, he took a long, hot, much-needed shower, tossing his dirty clothes in a corner. The water felt good, cleansing him of the images of Hammer's wife, Maria, covered in little slices, her body bruised and swollen. If he'd been Hammer, he would have gone on a killing rampage. He pressed his forehead to the cool tiles, allowing the hot water to run down his back. He thought that once they were out of the prison, away from what he considered the worst of human beings, they would discover people like Maria, like Anya, but they kept running across vile, ugly excuses for men and women, those who preyed on the weak. He was tired. Tired of killing. Tired of seeing. Tired of being Reaper. He wanted to be normal, so he would deserve Anya. With him, she was never going to get easy. He shut off the water abruptly. The alternative was to let her go. From the first moment he'd laid eyes on her, he'd known he was going to keep her. He'd made small attempts to save her, but deep down he knew, even if she'd left, he would have gone after her. He went down to her naked. Clothes still felt heavy on his body. He was afraid they always would. He lay on top of the blankets next to her, breathing her in. His Anya. Naked. Just the way he preferred her. He ran his hand down her back, from her neck to the dip just above the rise of her ass. She had a beautiful ass. He stroked his hand over that curve, feeling possessive. He leaned into her and used his teeth, taking a bite. Her breath hitched. Her entire body shuddered. He moved over her, his legs trapping hers. He'd taken his time exploring the front of her, claiming every inch. He was going to do the same to the back of her. He kissed his way back up her spine to the nape of her neck.
"You're okay?"
She whispered it. "Do I feel okay?" He used his hands to shape her body, memorizing her form, secretly worshipping her the only way he knew how. A faint smile was in her voice. More than okay. I was dreaming about you.
He liked that a fuck of a lot. Tell me about your dream. He loved the drowsy note in her voice. Sex and sin. It was there, sliding over his skin.
I dreamt you walked up to the bar when I was working, and you kissed me like you do.
Like I do? He echoed. How do I kiss you?
Like fire, like lightning, a storm of fire and lightning.
He liked that a fuck of a lot, too. His hands kept stroking, finding her curves, sliding over them. His mouth followed, kissing her soft skin, tasting it. He savored the slow burn building inside of him. Coming together with her was usually a firestorm, hot and wild. This was good, too. Gentle, relaxed. He was beginning to think he couldn't survive without her.
That was your dream? Me kissing you?
Her mouth curved more. That lower lip made his cock jerk hard against the back of her thigh. He dropped his hand to his aching flesh and fisted it. He could just make out her face turned to one side, looking back at him over her shoulder. He did a slow, lazy pump of his shaft, watching her face, wanting to take her in so many ways, but loving the easy burn growing between them.
You kissed me over and over until I couldn't think. Then you sat me on the bar and you ate me, pulling me right into your face. It was the most decadent thing ever. I don't know how you got all my clothes off, but you did.
Were we alone?
There was a small silence. Her teeth sank into her bottom lip, and he found himself holding his breath, waiting for her answer, his fist tighter now, sliding up and down his cock in earnest. His other hand went between her spread legs and found her slick and hot. He curled one finger into all that heat.
Anya, were we alone?
No. There were others in the bar, but I couldn't see how many or who. Your mouth drove me wild. I threw back my head and screamed when you made me come.
I like when you lose control. He pushed a second finger into her tight channel. Her small muscles bit down. That made his cock pulse with need. Then what happened?
You laid me down on the bar, right on top of it. Your face was shiny and wet, and you knelt over me and told me to lick you clean. I did. I couldn't help myself. You looked so sexy. Then you kissed me again, and I could taste myself.
I love how you taste, he said. He could spend a lifetime devouring her.
He pulled her hips back until she was on her knees, her ass in the air. He put his mouth between her legs and licked at that sweet nectar.
His.
She gave him everything he asked for. His fingers swept between her cheeks, and then his tongue followed. She didn't pull away from him. She pushed back into him.
Tell me more, baby, he whispered.
He put his mouth over her and suckled, strong, pulling out the liquid with his tongue, running it up and down her body, claiming every inch of her, inside and out. You pulled my legs around your waist, and then took me harder than you'd ever taken me, face to face, your eyes staring into mine. The bar was hard, and when you pounded into me, you pressed my body right into that rigid slab so I felt every inch of you. It was so beautiful, so perfect. I loved it. I love everything you do to me.
He hoped so, because he had a lot of things he wanted to do to her.
He wiped his face on those ass cheeks he was in love with, and without waiting, entered her. It didn't matter that he'd gone slow, taken his time, let that burn build. She was hotter than hell, surrounding him with a scorching, hot, silken fist, gripping him hard, squeezing down until that fire rushed up his spine and spread like a wildfire out of control.
I can't tell you how many times I sat in the bar, thinking about doing just that, stripping you naked and throwing your ass on the bar. I think I took you a dozen ways, your mouth, your pussy, your ass, all on that bar.
Were there people in the bar?
Her breath came in ragged little bursts, hitches. She moaned in between each word. Hell if I know. Once my cock was in you, I couldn't see beyond that. I was feeling, baby, not thinking. He couldn't think anymore. He began to move in her harder, searching for the lightning, feeling it streak through his body.